Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Statutory Interpretation and Federal Exchanges under the Affordable Care Act Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 25, 2015, the Supreme Court issued its decision in King v. Burwell. The question in this highly anticipated case is whether the Affordable Care Act authorizes the Internal Revenue Service to offer tax credit subsidies for individuals purchasing health insurance through federal exchanges. In an opinion delivered by the Chief Justice, the court held by a vote of 6-3 that the tax credit subsidies authorized by Section 36B of the Affordable Care Act for individuals purchasing health insurance through state exchanges are also available to individuals in states that have a federal exchange. The judgment of the Fourth Circuit was affirmed. Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined the opinion of the court. Justice Scalia filed a dissenting opinion, which Justices Thomas and Alito joined. To discuss the case, we have Professor Josh Blackman, who is an assistant professor of law at the South Texas College of Law, and Professor Jonathan Adler, who is the Johann Verhey Memorial Professor of Law and Director of the Center for Business Law and Regulation at Case Western Reserve University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Blackman.
Thank you, everyone, to the Federalist Society. So today we're talking about the decision in King v. Burwell, and I'm sure most people are familiar with the facts, but if not, I'll summarize them briefly. This case considered whether the Affordable Care Act, and the statute says that subsidies are available in exchanges established by the states, whether those subsidies can be paid out on a federal exchange. The long and tortured history of this case doesn't need to be summarized. Suffice to say that the court took this case last fall when there actually wasn't much of a circuit split, raising questions whether there were enough votes to perhaps reverse. Today we have the decision by a vote of 6-3. It was again Chief Justice Roberts voting to basically save the Affordable Care Act. And the decision is important for a couple of reasons. So first of all, the Chief Justice basically rejected the Solicitor General's argument that this was some sort of term of art that established by the state meant something. Also, the Chief Justice rejected this federalism argument, which has been bandied about, at least some know this on Volok today, that got nowhere. Also significant, the Chief Justice pointed out that this is not really a question of Chevron, right? The IRS isn't an agency in the healthcare business, and they shouldn't have even been delegated the authority to make this rule. Rather, this job falls to the Article III courts, and that's where the opinion goes downhill very quickly. So the reason why this opinion, I think, will strike many as difficult was the number of hoops that the court had to jump through to get to the final answer. Justice Scalia points out in his dissent that if you can find ambiguity in a statute that says established by the state, you can find ambiguity anywhere. And specifically, the Chief Justice goes through all these various ambiguities that could be raised. Well, if you interpret it this way, then there may be some exchanges with no people on them. If you interpret it that way, there may be this and that. And at every single turn, Justice Scalia says, well, this is a 900-page bill with lots of things that don't make sense. There are lots of ambiguities, but you can't read these external ambiguities to make it the actual text is nullified. As Justice Scalia points out, the phrase established by the state is written 7 times. Basically, in 7 places, the Chief Justice has struck out words from the statute. But I think the more troubling implication of the case has to do with the fact that the Chief Justice makes a lot about this death spiral business. He keeps saying over and over again that the purpose of the Affordable Care Act is to improve healthcare markets, quote, not to destroy them. If at all possible, we must interpret the act in a way that's consistent with the former and avoid the latter. So in other words, Obamacare is not just a law anymore. Right? It's this free-ranging license to expand and improve healthcare at all costs. And when you start taking that posture, when you view that the ruling against the government here would take away subsidies from people, it basically makes Obamacare untouchable. It's some sort of super statute that is beyond reach. And President Obama said that as much today when he said that 5 years in, what we're talking about is no longer just a law. The president said this. He says you can't unravel the fabric of what's been woven to the American people. You can't undo this. Justice Scalia makes the powerful rejoinder. The only reason why we would have this calamity is because of the IRS rule in the first place. Had the IRS never actually created this rule, probably all 50 or probably 47 or 48 states would have built exchanges. And as a result, we wouldn't have had this problem. The only reason we have this problem is because of this executive action in the first place to promulgate this rule. The Chief Justice's decision is residing in some sort of dream world once again, where what's fair is foul, what's foul is fair. Penalty is actually a tax, and a state's actually the federal government. And only by jumping through these, quote, somersaults, to paraphrase from Justice Scalia, we reach the conclusion that the government wins in this case. I think the court's also sending a signal saying, we're done with this. By taking this case now, when there were only apparently three votes to reverse, mean at least one judge in the majority voted for certiorari. You need four votes for cert. So at least one justice voted for cert, who ultimately voted to uphold the law. Why was this done? Well, maybe a justice changed his mind. Maybe he was persuaded. Or perhaps they said, let's get this over with now before 2016, so we don't have to deal with this in a presidential election. I don't know quite what to deal with that, but it's a very disconcerting opinion of what this court means. I'm going to stop here and turn it over to my friend Jonathan Adler, who is deserves a lot of credit. He and Michael Cannon took great steps to advance the theory of this case, and I look forward to hearing what Jonathan has to say.
Thank you, Josh. Yeah, so a disappointing opinion today by the Chief Justice, showing that he is not a textualist, and also in many respects showing that his commitment to minimalism is not as great as he would like. It's as if in certain respects the umpire thinks it's okay to pinch hit if necessary to ensure the proper outcome. The case is obviously a significant victory for the Obama administration, and I agree with much of what Josh said. It's a loss for textualist approaches to statutory interpretation. Textualism had appeared to be on something of an upswing in recent years, but this case certainly pushes it back against that quite strongly, holding that not only is ambiguity to be found quite readily, but that specific language used by Congress, even whereas here that language is added in repeated places at multiple times during the drafting process, that such language need not be given any meaning at all when interpreting the statute. It's also in some interesting ways a loss for the Chevron doctrine. So in my view, this is, while a win for Obama in some respects, it's a double loss for Justice Scalia, because two of the things that he has been a fierce advocate of, both textualism and an expansive Chevron doctrine, or expansive application of the Chevron doctrine, both took a hit today. There are ways in which this decision by the Chief is somewhat reminiscent of his dissent in the City of Arlington versus FCC case. I have some sympathies for the Chief Justice's dissent in that other case. I just don't have the confidence that this case, the decision in King, represents a majority for anything more than the precise outcome here, as opposed to a majority for a more constrained view of Chevron. That is to say, For the court to reach its decision in favor of the administration, Chief Justice Roberts says that the apparent conflict between the text and the purpose and structure of the statute renders the statute ambiguous. Normally, under Chevron, that would mean the court defers to the agency and lets the agency resolve the ambiguity. But the Chief Justice says that can't be done here because of the magnitude of the question at issue, and so instead the court will take it upon itself to resolve the ambiguity and do so, as Josh already noted, not based on adhering to the text that Congress wrote, but instead adhering to the court's construction of what the court believes the statute was meant to do and how that structure was supposed to operate. In that respect, the court is narrowing the scope of Chevron and certainly giving plaintiffs in future cases the ability to argue that their questions or their issues raise the sorts of questions that should escape from Chevron. A couple quick comments on some of the practical implications of this case. One, I do think that lower courts will read this case as a reason to be skeptical of other implementation challenges to the statute. So I think this case, although it did not rely upon Chevron, will have the practical effect of giving the executive branch greater license in implementing the statute. It will not, however, end Obamacare litigation. Supreme Court has a Clean Air Act case this term, and the Clean Air Act was last revised 25 years ago. the Affordable Care Act is more complicated, more poorly written, and puts more at stake than the Clean Air Act does. As a consequence, we'll see ACA litigation for decades to come. If the chief thought he was somehow putting an end to it, he's in for a rude awakening. There will be many more cases, and this statute will be up before the Supreme Court time and time again. The other somewhat ironic practical effect of this decision is it makes clear to states that they have very little reason to run their own exchanges. A lot of states have had difficulty running their own exchanges. It's costly. It's an administrative nightmare. This statute removes any negative consequence of a state giving up running its own exchange. So I would not be at all surprised if going forward we see states begin to turn their exchanges back over to the federal government. And the real irony of that, of course, is that in the Senate, as the Affordable Care Act was being drafted and debated, its supporters repeatedly said that this statute would not result in a federal takeover of health insurance markets. And the primary basis for making that argument that, for example, the Senate Democratic Policy Committee made was that all exchanges would be run by the federal government, all exchanges would be run by the states, not by the federal government. Not only is that not what has happened under the Affordable Care Act, it is certainly not what will happen going forward as a result of this decision.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.